first question is from David Snow of Energy Equity, Inc. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I hate to go first because everybody else will raise questions that I want to follow up on. But do you can you give us a your assessment and outlook for the spot uranium price?
David, I'll ask George to respond to that.
Sure. Well, David, demand this year has been, really been very low so far. I think while fuel buyers might like to add to strategic inventories given today's lower uranium prices, the fact is that with the global financial situation, I think most utility fuel buyers are under instruction to minimize capital outlays. And so, for the most part, only utilities with real or near-term demands have come to the market. So there's been little or no discretionary buying by utilities so far this year. So with that lower demand and adequate supply chasing the demand that is there, we've seen prices soften. And, you know, we believe that given the global financial situation, spot prices are likely to remain quite volatile over the course of 2009.
When do you see the real demand coming in? What you?
Well, utilities are generally well covered under under existing contracts and with moderate amounts of inventory. What's interesting is in this period, you know, they're going to be drawing down, or they are drawing down inventories here a little bit, you know, to avoid the market. Uncovered utility requirements really don't grow for significantly, I should say, for several more years. So, you know, utilities can stay out of the market in the near term here for a short while, but eventually we'll have to come back to the market. And then, of course, I've not, in all of this, I've not factored in what India and China might do. They're always the wild card in terms of stepping into the spot market.
Okay, thank you very much. And is there a possibility I could ask, is there any guess as to when you're going to have some visibility on restarting Cigar or starting Cigar?
David, we're still in the dewatering stage, I think making good progress, but until we get it dewatered and can get underground, we're just speculating, and so we're just not doing that yet.
And that'll be the end of the year before you get the second flow stabilized and dewatered?
That's the current prognostication, yes.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from John Redstone of Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. First off, I'd just like to clarify something. On page 10 of your news release under Cigar Lake, you write, we have confirmed that the main source of the increased water inflow observed on August the 12th was from the fissure. By saying the main source, are you suggesting that there are other sources?
John, I wouldn't read it that way, but I think out of a sort of caution, we just say this is the one we believe generated the water inflow. We did a lot of work, a lot of testing to see if we could see others and could not. But you can't speak in terms of absolutes, and we just won't do it. So.
All right, fair enough. The other thing I wanted to ask is you mentioned that you see your costs going up 5 to 10% this year. Could you give us a little bit more detail on what factors are causing those cost increases?
Yeah, I'll give it a try, and then, Kim, maybe you can, you know, certainly royalties, there's still a little bit of inflationary cost pressure, although we're hoping that that will reverse. So royalties are a function. Obviously, the price is a function of what we buy, and when we buy in the market, as we always do every year, including Russian material, that's gone up in price as well a little bit. So combination of those things are what's taking it up. Kim, you got
John, we made some purchases in 2008 in the open market at much higher prices than we had historically. That just goes into an average inventory system, so some of that spills over into 2009 as well.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes of TD Newcrest. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Kim, could you give us some idea what the terms are on the new or the extended debt facility?
Well, I can give you the maturity dates, Greg. The one facility was extended to the middle of June 2010, and the other one, the $100 million, matures February of 2010. The terms are I thought quite reasonable, but I really won't give you more detail than that. I would think I have an excellent bank syndicate, and I had very reasonable terms from them.
So you're not going to give us something like LIBOR plus 400 basis points, sir?
No, because it's a whole lot less than that, but I still won't give it to you.
Worth a try.
Good try, Greg.
If I could follow on. Tim, Zone 2, Panel 5, when do you expect the bulk of production from MacArthur coming from that zone?
Well, Greg, we're looking at the second half of the year, really, for that zone to get started. You know, it's in the freezing mode right now, has been for a couple months, and that's going quite well. So I think we're looking at going in there probably in September of this year and then just ramping up our operations in there. So sometime in 2010, probably.
By 2010, what, 75% of production from MacArthur will be coming from there?
Yeah, I don't have the exact number, but it'd be somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from George Topping of Blackmont Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Gentlemen, I've got a question on the source of uranium sales. You know, there was 5.4 million from production, 1.8 roundabout for the HEU, and that, you know, production was about 0.7 less than you originally expected in early November. I'm just wondering where the source of uranium came from to fill the gap between production and sales.
George, let me give it a try to that one. Certainly with the purchases we'd made earlier, we had built some inventory, and there was a slight inventory drawdown to fill that balance.
Because it's about 3.4 million pounds, I work out as the difference. I'm just wondering, is there a future liability associated with those sales in the fourth quarter?
I'll answer it in a second type of way. If you mean, did we borrow material to make that sale? Absolutely not.
Okay. That's good. Okay, and just the second thing was, as a follow-up, there was a note to the statements mentioning a $75 million debt repayment from Bruce.
Okay.
Was that in the fourth quarter, or was that earlier in the year?
I think it was spread throughout the year, but there was a partner loan of $225 million that had been outstanding since 2003, and Bruce Management decided this was the year to move it off the books.
Okay.
So $75 million being our share is what we were repaid throughout 2008.
So it was equally spaced. It wasn't the bulk of it in Q4, for example.
I don't remember the exact time, George, but something like that probably.
All right. Good. I'll come back later. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Duncan McKean of Macquarie Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, operator. Just, and I apologize if this has already been answered, but wondering if there was an actual increase in spot market purchases that you guys did in Q4 specifically. And also as a second question, I'm wondering if you can expand a little bit on the struggles you're having with the dissolution rate at the Inkai operation.
Okay, George, why don't you tackle the first one and Tim the second half?
Yeah, there were no increased purchases in Q4, increased spot purchases.
Okay.
And Tim?
Yeah, so at Inkai, in our Block 1, which we've been working on last year, we've been putting the somewhat limited acid we've been receiving into that block and just haven't seemed to be getting the production that we're looking for, the increase in grade. And so we've done some, I guess what you'd call flushing of the wells over the last couple of weeks and month, and sent some experts from our U.S. operation over there to look at that, and that seems to have been helping. We see the grades coming up, the flow coming up, and so we're optimistic that we'll be able to get to much better production from Inkai Block 1 in 2009.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Borden Putnam of Mione Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Tim, if I could go to you and carry on where Greg left off asking about the sources of production at MacArthur. There's a note in the third quarter release that I want to go back to that talks about to deliver the additional ore required to allow Key Lake to achieve production targets in 2009, that a short-term area is being developed in Zone 2. Is that Zone 2 Panel 3, or is it someplace else?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Borden. It's back in that 1, 2, and 3 scraping the walls where we had the freeze in place already. There's some remnants, I guess, left there, and so we're back in there scraping some of that out here, right?
So what's, if you can split it down for us, as we talked about last quarter, what's the percent of feed coming from the different zones, 1, 2, and 3, and are those the only sources of ore until panel 5 is prepared?
Yeah, I don't have the percentages, but I can tell you we ended the year last year with a great inventory, about 2 million pounds in inventory that we're using now in the first half, if you like, in months of 2009, along with that those panels 1, 2, and 3 production to feed Key Lake. And then, as I said earlier to an earlier question, we'll move into the new zones midway through the year.
Okay, and lastly, in the MD&A, it talks about that production shortfall that took you down below the 12 million that you guided for that was related to various process and equipment problems at Key Lake. Can you give us a little more on that?
Yeah, we had some issues at Key Lake for sure in 2008. I think they're set out in our documents. We had some oxygen plant issues at the start. We seemed to have those nailed down, and we had a piece of equipment called a bird centrifuge, which is just before the calciner, the dryer, and that we struggled with a bit, but we seem to have that on track now too. So I think we fixed those problems, and we'll keep it going as we work toward revitalizing the mill going forward.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question is from Lawrence Smith of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Congratulations on extending your line of credit. Obviously, tough in a market like this. Tim, I guess I'll pick up where Greg left off. You know, if I said LIBOR plus 300, how would that sound? And
yeah, you keep going south, please.
Okay. Just on covenants. Have you guys ever disclosed, what your financial covenants are?
There are two covenants. They're listed in the documents, or in the notes of the financials. They're in there.
Okay. And was there any change with the extension or not? Any change in the covenants or not?
No change at all.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ian Howlett of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Are you now still getting any material from reprocessing tails, or are those contracts over?
George?
We're getting material yet in 2009, yes.
Okay, that's the last year?
Yes.
Okay. And just if I may, MacArthur River production guidance in the longer term, are you still planning to take it up to the 22 million tons?
Somewhere in between 20 and 22, depending on the mine capability, after we make the transition.
And the technical report filed yesterday, you have it sort of tailing off. Is that sort of more for the technical report, and you don't believe that will actually be how it's going to progress?
If you look at it, I mean, it's really a function of what you can call proven reserves.
Right.
And hopefully, as the mine continues and we continue to do more drilling, you bring more of the considerable resources into proven reserves, and the numbers continue to look good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Brian MacArthur of UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Can you just give us an update on where the Silex joint venture is, just given the challenges in the economic outlook right now, what GE is doing with that, please?
Okay, George?
Yes, where we are with Global Laser Enrichment, or GLE, is, it's fully staffed up. I think there's an excess of 100 people there, so work is underway. We expect to have the test loop run at the middle of this year. And the project is really cashed up. That's where our purchase price went in to cash up the project. So it's in good stead and moving forward. We'll know at the middle of the, a little later this year, I guess in the second half of this year, just how good the technology looks.
So by mid-year, you may be able to tell whether it actually works.
Well, we're convinced it worked. I guess it's the middle of this year after we've done the test loop as to how well it works and whether we have a commercial process.
Okay, great.
I wouldn't quite look for it the middle of the year, Brian, and maybe a little later than that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Got to have a little runtime,
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ralph Profiti of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. First one, maybe for Jerry or even George. How have the floor prices on contracts reacted during the recent weakness, and do you expect them to hold in sort of the previous guidance in, say, the mid-$40 or pound, or have those slipped a little bit? And the second,
George is on the front line. I'm sorry, Ralph. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question was in relation to the movement of the floor price on contracts that maybe you've written, say, over the last 6 months. Has it, you know, previously you were doing, I guess, in the mid-40s. Have those slipped at all? And my second question is maybe for you, Jerry, or Tim. Versus the previous table of guidance, U.S. production post-2010 is down about 25 or 30%. Just wondering, is there a permitting issue there or just lower guidance? Thanks very much.
Okay, George, you want to tackle the first one?
Sure. Well, in respect to the floor prices that we've been securing, they've generally been in that mid-40 price range, and you know, most of the offers or deals that we look at are further out in time, and so the long-term fundamentals of the industry have continued to remain fairly positive. So we stuck with that mid-$40 range on our floor prices. We haven't moved off that. But these are longer-term deals, so they, you know, deliveries start further out in time, and when you look out there, there's fewer players in that market, and fundamentals are stronger.
Okay. And Tim, can you talk a little bit about U.S. production and the permitting issues?
Yeah, absolutely, Ralph. We did back it off a little bit in the U.S., and that's due to the increasing complexity, as we say in our MD&A, of the regulatory situation down there. There's several agencies in the U.S. that oversee our activities, all of them having taken certainly greater interest, not just in our activities, but in uranium mining activities in Wyoming and Nebraska overall. So we're trying to be realistic with our expectations as to how we can ramp up our production, and that's why you see our numbers stretched out a little bit longer.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question is from Cliff Hale-Sanders of CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Excuse me. Just a couple of quick questions, if I may. On Ingrai, if you could just elaborate perhaps a little bit on the changing legal environment there, primarily on the subsoil laws and the potential impact on your stabilization agreements. Obviously, it's still something that's under assessment, but kind of what level of risk assessment could you give us some guidance for on that one at this time? And also on Port Hope, is there any more clarity on the timing for renewed asset supplies there? Obviously, 2009 they're covered, but for the longer term.
Cliff, on Inkai specifically, really what we say in the MD&A is pretty well what we know. You know, there is the proposition on the subsoil use agreements. We've got the long-standing stabilization agreement, which is for the project, so it benefits both us and our partner, although the partner, of course, is government-owned. But beyond that, we simply will engage in a dialogue with the government and see where it all comes out, and hopefully when it's all said and done, it's viewed by all parties as mutually satisfactory.
But there's no timeline that you know of at this point?
Well, they talk about having legislation done within, I think we said, about a six-month period of time.
Okay.
But you're dealing in Central Asia, so timelines may be faster or shorter.
Okay. And at Port Hope?
Okay.
Yeah. Cliff,
can you answer that one?
Oh. Yeah, absolutely. Cliff, it's Tim Gitzel.
Hey, Tim.
On Port Hope, at the end of last year, 2008, you know, we did restart the sixth plant, and actually it ran very well in the limited time we had it running. We produced just over 1,000 tons of UF6, and then the HF situation we had to deal with. Our supplier was asking some terms for HF that we couldn't live with. So we stopped production, but now we're negotiating with several potential suppliers. We have made good progress. We will have HF available to us to restart the plant in the second half.
Okay, so longer term, you don't expect any more, I guess, production problems?
Not because of HF supply. We are going to diversify our HF supply going forward.
Okay. And at this point, while the agreements aren't signed, sealed, and delivered, you're quite comfortable with them?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from David Snow of Energy Equity, Inc. Please go ahead.
I'm wondering if the global laser enrichment technology is causing any effect on the enrichment market, either delaying the expansion of the alternative technologies or depressing the price as a result of anybody thinking it'll work, or can you give us any idea whether it's too early for it to have any impact on the market, and how do you think it will impact the market?
Gary, you want me to answer that? Oh, you may have lost it.
Well,
it's George here. I would answer that by saying I think it's too early to tell what the impact will be. And I don't think it's priced into the market at this point. So I think it's just too early to answer that.
Okay, you'll give us an update on the progress in the second half?
Yes.
The next question is from Vincent Lauerman of Uranium Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Good morning. At the beginning of this conference call, Mr. Grandy mentioned that Cameco's business should be relatively recession-proof. At the same time, I noticed that George mentioned that spot uranium prices might be relatively low this year. In addition, across your four business segments, I've noticed that your capital expenditures are about $125 million less for 2009 compared to actuals in 2008.
Right.
So I guess my question is there some concern on your management's front that your six-year winning streak in terms of revenue and earnings may come to an end in 2009?
Vincent, lots of parts to that. So let me try and pick pieces out as we go along here. Jerry's initial comment really relates to the fact that, you know, we do believe our sales are quite insulated from the economic environment. If you look at nuclear power plants, they are baseload electricity. They are, in effect, I'll phrase it to you, they're the last plants people will turn off. So the demand for our product really is very, very stable going forward. I think George's comment about the price here and volatility is just a matter of where the customers are on their own supply arrangements. As to the capital reductions, we are an exceptionally prudent when we come to financial management, and certainly looking at what's going on in the rest of the world, it made sense to slow down activity a little bit this year. As Jerry also mentioned, we are moving forward on all fronts to secure current and future production. We're just taking it at a little bit slower pace maybe than we might have in the past. As to your final point on whether 6 years of increasing revenue will be at risk, well, we'll let that play out as the year unfolds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Simon Tonkin of Thomas Wiseau. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. For Inkay, what is the outlook for acid supply there? And also, for MacArthur River, has there been any further water inflows in the development areas?
Tim?
Yeah, so at Inkay, we're encouraged, I guess, by the acid supply we've seen in the first, and I know it's early, in the first part of 2009 now. We've got all the acid we can handle in January and the first half here of February, and December was good as well. So we're encouraged, as I say, and we hope that carries on. MacArthur, nothing new on the waterfront other than the small inflow we had at the end of last year in November that was easily handled by our pump and treat system.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question is from George Topping of Blackmont Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a follow-up, maybe for Kim here, on the Canadian tax review. That the increase in the 2003 is says the taxable income could be up $43 million out of the $200 million that was reported back in 2003, and you made extra allowances for any tax that might come from that. Have you worked out a range of the potential liabilities here if it goes against you, you know, best case, worst case type of thing?
Well, George, we're really not going to disclose more than we have out there. I would put it this way. We are exceptionally thorough, and the analysis we've done, the process we've used to come up, and our best estimate as to what the incremental cost will be is the $15 million provision that we booked in Q4 there.
I see. So that would fully cover
that fully covers
fully cover it.
2003 through 2008.
Okay. Great. And just secondly, on the Centerra cash, it's building up inside that company there. Is there any further news on whether you can get a dividend out of Centerra or get hold of that cash outside of the company and get it into Cameco proper?
Well, that's always a debate that's out there. Certainly what we would hope Centerra does instead of that, of course, is to continue to grow their business and expand their reserve resource base and production capabilities, and that's their first order of business. As to what happens with that cash over time, we'll have to watch that one as it goes, but paying a dividend out now would not be their first priority, no.
Good. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question is from Ben Elias of Stern Edgy. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have a question that's a little more general. At the beginning of the conference call, you talked about customer relationships. You also talked about the growth internationally, India, China. Can you sort of address, the trend we've seen where China certainly looking to get in on the game themselves? They had to deal with Arriva. They have a lot of joint ventures in Kazakhstan. The president of Kazakhstan was at India's Republic Day parade, and India is certainly forming a lot of relationships there. How do you think Cameco, how do you see Cameco participating in this growth where the new demand is going direct to source?
Well, it's George Acey here. With those countries, we're also working with them directly. So now we don't have an interest in selling them part of any of our operations or anything else. We're interested in a long-term supply arrangement. And we have a good dialogue with them. Very active, and we expect to secure significant business in both of those countries as we go forward. That's about it. Straightforward.
Yeah, I would add also, Ben, though, that it is a world market for uranium, and the product, the natural product itself is fungible. So where general demand increases impacts the market worldwide.
Okay. Just as a follow-up, your fuel services business, is that well-positioned? What is your expectation of the demand increase there? We've seen Arriva, expanding at George Bessie. They're looking at Eagle Rock in Idaho. Are you looking, down the road and saying perhaps we do need to make a bigger push on the enrichment side? In addition to your interest in the laser enrichment,
at this time we're quite pleased with our investment in the laser enrichment, and I think that represents for the time being our foray into enrichment. So we'll always look at any opportunities that might arise that make sense. But for now, I think we're happy with the one we have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Borden Putnam of Meoni Capital. Please go ahead.
Tim, back to you if I could. On the give a life of mine production profile for MacArthur and the new 43-101, and it looks like based on the discussion we just had a second ago and the comments about zone 4 lower coming in a little like in 2010, it looks like this chart should be pushed out a little bit to the right. Is that fair?
No, I think the chart is where it should be. As I said, we're just waiting for the freezing to take hold in the zone 2 panel 5, and that liberates a significant number of pounds in the order of less than 100 million pounds. And so that's where we'll be focused. And then zone 4, we're moving into that area. You know, we're going very cautiously into that area, but that'll come on as well in 2010. So I don't think the chart has to move too much.
Okay, it just looks like zone 4 was coming in 2009, but I'll look at that thing a little closer. On the reserve report, and maybe this is a question for Bob, in the past you guys have given reconciliations for reserves and resources in a table, and there's no tables in the MD&A this year. Was that intentional or an oversight?
Right, there wasn't one. What we provided this year is the same as what we provided last year, actually.
No, not exactly, because after the reserve statement, then there's a page of reconciliation, and it shows throughput, additions, deletions by table in a tabular form for both reserves and resources, and I don't see that in the current MD&A.
I'll follow up and get back to you, Borden.
Okay, thanks. One last thing on the reserves and resources. There were some big changes at Crow Butte. 47% of the proven has now reported to probable, and there's a commensurate drop in grade with an overall about a 63% drop in contained metal for the proven at Crow Butte, and also there were some shifts in the resources there. I know it's not a big resource, but those are big movements. Can you give us some idea of what's going on there?
That's Tim Borden. We did some re-looking at those again, and being conservative, we wanted to make sure they were in the right category, so we moved some of them back a bit. They're still there, obviously, but we just had a re-look at them, and we're re-looking at them again this year to make sure we've got the feasibility work and study work to back them up. So that was our work this year.
But, okay, without that table that I was asking for, there's no additions to reserves at MacArthur, no change there, just as it was basically last year, net of depletion.
Tim?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Hello?
Okay, thanks. I'll wait for the table. Thanks, Bob.
Okay.